right now is hurting.
The most famous ghost in all of Emory County was Anna Eliza Reynolds, who was here in Castledale. And she, back in those days, there was just one Castledale, but there was Upper Castledale and Lower Castledale. And she was traveling along the creek, and she was expecting their 12th child, her 12th child. And she was taking a buggy up to a Relief Society meeting in Upper Castledale, now called Orangeville. And she went through a dip in the road, and for some reason her horse reared and the buggy tipped over and she was killed. And then sometime after that, in the late 1800s, this was in the late 1800s, but sometime after that, and to this present day, people see the ghost of a pioneer woman, and it appears that she's looking for something along that area, and people have assumed that she was looking for her child, that she, unborn child, I don't know. But that's the one, the ghost more people have seen than anybody else. And to this day, they've named that road. It's actually not exactly the same place. They built a new road, but the road is named Ghost Road. And that's the most well-known, notorious ghost sighting place in Emory, in all of Emory County, is Ghost Road. It goes from Castledale to Orangeville now.
Have you ever seen her?
No, I have not, ever. But lots of people swear that they have.
That's cool. Did you ever go play pranks on Ghost Road?
Yeah, we did. One time when I was in high school, we took a basketball and we wrapped a sheet around it, and then we sat up on the cliffs up above Ghost Road, and when cars would drive by, we would throw the ball with the sheet in it so that people could see it out in the distance as they were driving towards it, and it would hit the road and bounce off and off the other side of the road, and we had some people hiding down there to catch it and hide it. And so people would be driving along, and all of a sudden they'd see this thing come down. They couldn't make out quite what it was, and it would hit and bounce and then be gone. And we'd all be hiding when they drove by. And yeah, there were a lot of people swore they'd seen ghosts there.
What percentage of the people that have seen the ghost of Ghost Road were fooled by you?
I don't know. I don't have any idea. That was just a stupid thing we did in high school. We did it on Halloween.
Ghost Road was only a few blocks from the house I grew up in. I never knew why it was called Ghost Road until I heard the story you just heard. The man who told that story is named Neil. He's an Emory County native, and he used to run a ghost tour as part of the annual bouldering festival. He is also, full disclosure, my father. Ghost Road is the final stop on his tour, and I tried to find somebody who had seen the Ghost Road ghost. But everybody I talked to said they couldn't be sure what they had seen. It was just a flash of white. A figure who was there one minute and gone the next. Someone standing in a field waving who wasn't there when they went back to check. That's the fascinating thing about ghosts, especially outdoor ghosts. You can never be totally sure what you saw. Was it a restless spirit or an admittedly hilarious prank? This is episode 2 of our mini-series about Emory County. So far, we've been in the closed spaces, the inside of an old church. So now, we're going to venture outside, to the back roads, the streets, one of the largest buildings in the county, and the space between waking and sleeping. I'm Dory Peacock, and this is The Ghost Box.
Okay, so full disclosure, the Wishing Place, there are a couple different ones, and no one really knows what the real one is. One of them is out in the desert that I've never been to, and I don't know that much about it because I can't get to it. I haven't been able to figure out where it is. But the other one is in Emory. It's a house just outside the outskirts of Emory, and it is, it's actually fallen down now. I just noticed when I drove past there coming home from Ephraim the other day that it's totally fallen down. I don't know if they demolished it or it's just a pile of rubble, but it's gone.
This is Catherine. She's a friend of mine from high school. She always had the best scary stories, and the scariest one was about the wishing place. She tells it better than I do.
So when I was in 9th grade, I was in Mr. Durant's class. And Mr. Durant, man, he was the coolest. And if we were really good and got our work done, he would tell us stories. And around Halloween time, he decided to tell us about the Wishing Place. And the Wishing Place was one of the hot spots of Emery County. I'd heard my older siblings talk about it, but they never had a lot of facts. And Mr. Durant claimed that he knew so much about it. So the Wishing Place was a home in which people who were of kind of a satanic cult used to sacrifice things to demons or basically these dark spirits to get things that they wanted. And it got the reputation kind of like the monkey's paw, that if you went there and made a wish or asked the spirits for something, they would give it to you. However, if you didn't make a sacrifice, it turned out really, really bad. It would happen in a really bad way. And so the people that started making sacrifices there, the story is in the 1920s, around 1910s, 1920s, that there was a lot of satanic people here in Emery County, and they would sacrifice things. And at one point, they actually stole somebody's mare that was pregnant with a foal, and they actually cut the foal from inside of it, or out from inside of it. And and then they sacrificed the foal from inside the mare, and it was this big to-do because apparently the mare was bred to a racehorse, and I don't know. That was the story. And the more important the sacrifice, the bigger the sacrifice, the bigger the wish you could make. And so then a rumor started going around, and I actually heard this part of the story from my young women's leader on a girls' camp, that they were going to sacrifice a child. So it had to be a young girl. She had to be a virgin, and she had to be between the ages of 12 and 14. She had to be around, you know, a certain height, and I don't remember what it was, but she had to be beautiful. And my teacher, not Mr. Durant, this came from my young women's leader, she told me that when she when her grandmother was in school, that they actually shut down school for a couple days so that they could protect their kids, and then they went and kind of ran these guys out of town. Now, Mr. Durant talked about a story of high school kids with this idea that, you know, you go there and you make a wish and then it turns out bad. And he told this story of Sarah and Beth, who were best friends in high school, two girls that he had known, and they both liked the same guy, but this guy was Beth's boyfriend. And Sarah kind of kept it to herself that she was in love with this guy. And they decided one night, just for fun, they would go to the Wishing Place and just mess around. And they went out to the Wishing Place, and Sarah, as she was going through the house, this wish kept going through her head that she wishes Beth's boyfriend would love her. She wished he would love her. And she thought, well, I can't steal him from Beth. It has to be his decision. So maybe I should wish for being prettier than Beth. If I'm more beautiful than her, maybe that will make him like me. And so the spot that you wish in the house is before the fireplace, because that's where they would burn the sacrifices. And so she wished at the fireplace that she would be more beautiful than Beth. And on their way home from the Wishing Place, they got in a car accident, and Beth went through the windshield. They weren't wearing a seatbelt. She went through the windshield, and it completely destroyed her face. And they had to try to rebuild her face, but she was completely mutilated. And so that was a story of how Sarah became more beautiful than Beth. And they said that Sarah tried to tell people that that's what happened, but nobody believed her, and she ended up going to an asylum where she ended up committing suicide. So that's the story Mr. Durant told us. Probably not the most appropriate story for 9th graders, but it was fascinating. And so when I was in 9th grade, I decided, oh my gosh, this is in Emory. Let's find where the Wishing Place is, because that's the sensible thing to do. And I got together with Taryn, who lived in Emory, and she swore she knew where the Wishing Place was. And we had another friend named Nick and Alex, and just a couple boys and girls. You know, we're 9th grade. We are going to have some fun. So we decided to go trick-or-treating over Halloween, and at the end of trick-or-treating, when it got dark, we would actually go find the Wishing Place. And Taryn told us that this house had animal traps around it to, you know, trap animals, but also to discourage people from trying to go into the Wishing Place. And so we decided we were going around this desert hill, kind of through a back way where there weren't streets, and hopping the fence, and we would go in through the backyard. So we finished trick-or-treating. We walked down this street and then straight out into, it was on the west side of Emory. And we're walking through the desert. We walked around this hill and then we saw the wishing place. And it was this big, scary house. It was a two-story house, but it was falling apart. There were holes through the roof. There were holes in the walls and shingles falling off. It was pretty creepy looking. It was what the, you know, epitome of spooky old house, but it just looked like a house. So we jumped the fence and it was fenced off in the back by just, part of it was kind of a white picket, like wood fence, but it had fallen over and somebody had added a barbed wire section with a cedar post around the other side. And so we got over the fence and we started walking towards this house. And I have to tell you, walking towards this house was the eeriest feeling. It got cooler and cooler the closer that we got to the house, and the dirt, it was like you look down and you're walking on dirt, but it almost felt spongy. It was super weird. And it was Taryn that first pointed out that as we're walking across this dirt, that we didn't have any footprints. We should have had footprints, but there were no footprints. And as we got closer to the house, we weren't very close, maybe, you know, 100 feet away from it, walking in through the back area. And we thought, okay, is this really a good idea? And we looked up at the house, and in the very top floor, a light turned on. And man, we were out of there. We turned around and we took off. There's no way that house had electricity to it. It was so old, it was falling apart, and we took off. And as we took off, we ran, we jumped the fence, and we stopped, and we were just talking to each other. And Nick and Taryn made the comment. They were saying, man, could you just think of all the things that you wanted just running through your head? Like, and we had all made the deal before we went in that we would not wish for anything ever. And it was interesting because as you went, whether it was just the power of suggestion or something, you thought of all the things that you wanted in life, all the things that you wanted to happen for you, stupid little toys that you wanted or electronics or fun things. But yeah, anyway, as you're walking towards it, it would get stronger and stronger. And then when we took off and jumped the fence, we were running back. And yeah, that's one story that I have of the wishing place the first time that I went there. But it left an impression because I was kind of terrified of it. It was a fun story to tell people, but I had decided I wasn't going in there. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel right. It was like your most selfish person aspect of yourself. I don't know. It was a weird feeling. It was a very, very dark feeling going towards the house.
So, but you did go back.
Yes, I did go back one time.
And did anything happen that time?
Not to me. I was in the car. So basically what happened, my cousin's cousin, his name was Jake. He worked at a mortuary and he had some really weird experiences at the mortuary with hearing voices and people sitting up when they were supposed to be dead and weird things happening. So he decided he was going to document his experience, and then he started collecting ghost stories. So he had heard about the wishing place and that it was in Emory County and asked me about it. And I said, well, I know where it is, but I'm not going in. He said, well, can you at least drive us there? And I said, sure. So I drove him there and I waited outside the front gate of the wishing house while he and his buddies went in. And I watched them walk in the door. They had their cameras and everything. And honestly, I don't know if they got any footage. They never told me, but they walked in the door of the wishing place, went in the front gate. Yes, there were some animal traps set out there, but they were pretty easy for them to avoid. And they went in the front door. And what Jake said happened is they walked through the living room and kind of went over into the kitchen area while one of his buddies decided to walk over by the fireplace, which is where things were supposed to happen. And when Jake walked into the kitchen area with one of his buddies, he walked past a kitchen cabinet, and as his buddy was walking towards it, the cabinet slammed open and hit him in the face. And so they were out of there. The guy had a bloody nose and he came running back to the car. And I was we were in an SUV and I was just sitting there, and they came running out of the house. The one kid was holding his face and they were screaming, and they jumped in the car and they're like, we're not going back in there.
Okay, I will admit, the Wishing Place is a wild tale. The part about sacrifices and devil worship sounds like something that circulated during the Satanic Panic of the 1980s. In fact, when my oldest sister was in kindergarten, a similar rumor of child sacrifice made the rounds. But what about that light in the attic? And what about that nosebleed? Maybe there isn't a house in Emery that grants wishes, but we've established that Emery is a pretty spooky place, and the old church isn't its only haunted house.
Taryn, once again, lives in Emery, and I used to have sleepovers at her house, and there was one time, and she told me that her house was haunted, and I just thought it was cool. So I would sleep over at her house, and her computer would turn off and on during the middle of the night, and that was kind of what she said, but she said that there were some times when something would walk up and down her stairs and come into her room at night. So I thought, well, this will be cool to see. And so I decided to sleep over, and I was up in her room, and sure enough, in the middle of the night, we could hear something coming up and down the stairs, which, side note, that house is for sale right now if anybody wants a haunted house. And as we were up in her room, we could hear somebody coming up and down the stairs, and her door opened in the middle of the night. And I'm just thinking, oh, this is probably Kenny. He's just trying to mess with us, whatever. And we were both sleeping on her little twin bed together. And as we're sleeping there, and I'm just thinking, oh crap, what's happening? Maybe it's just Kenny, maybe everything's fine. All of a sudden, her blanket starts getting pulled off the bed. And there's nothing there. And so I was like, nope, we're done. We're going downstairs and sleeping in the living room.
And so, was it fine after that?
Yeah, it was fine. When we went downstairs, it was fine. It was just her upstairs. It was pretty freaky. But yeah, that was probably my scariest experience, is sleeping up in her room and having the blanket pulled off of me, and there was nothing in there.
All right, let's say goodbye to Emery and go north to Castledale, the best town. This story, I was kind of there for. So, Catherine and I were hanging out at my house one evening, probably watching movies with our guy friends or gossiping about our classmates. Catherine had an early curfew, so she left around 9 p.m. But it was fall, and already dark. The next day at school, she looked kind of nervous, and she told me this story. I asked her to tell it again for all of you.
I got in my car, and I was driving home. And I turned on the street that goes to J&D Auto and the clinic. And as I turned on that street to go to the road that goes to Farron, there was a very tall black figure standing underneath the street light. But what was really scary about it is it had no features at all. It was in the light. It should have had features. You should have been able to see that it was a person, but it was huge and it was black and it was like a solid shadow. And I stared at it for a second, but I was turning, so I was kind of startled, thinking, oh crap, I'm turning, I'm gonna get in a crash or something, so I was freaked out. So I looked at, you know, ahead to see where I was turning and to hit the brakes, and when I looked back, it was gone. And it was a really, really eerie feeling. And as I drove home, I hurried and called my dad on my cell phone and said, will you please talk to me? Something just happened. I'm really freaked out, and I just need you to talk me through this. And my dad had some experiences similar to that in his childhood. And so he just talked me through it, and we said a prayer together over the phone. He said a prayer over the phone that I could calm down and things would be okay. And I made it home, and when I got home, he gave me a blessing. And then it was okay.
Now that we're here, on the dark roads of a small desert town, let's venture into the mountains. Let's wander some of the back roads that connect these sleepy little hamlets.
Okay, so I grew up in a small rural town with a whole bunch of old coal mines and power plants and roads that nobody would really drive on. And there was a place that me and my friends would like to go drive around, and it's kind of close up by a mountain. And it's this really, really long, steep hill that kind of curves around. And it's kind of just a fun place to drive. And me and my friends would go out there a lot, and it was fun.
This is Jaina. Jaina has the gift, which I know because she also happens to be my sister. The road she's talking about is called Coal Haul Road, because it's the road that was used to haul coal away from the old Desby Dove mine. By the time Jaina was a teenager, the mine was closed and the road was unused most of the time. It was also unlit, so driving its twists and turns at night was an unnerving experience.
One night, I just had a lot on my mind. I was thinking about a lot of different things, and I told my mom and dad I was just going to go for a drive. And so I decided, oh, that would be a good place to go. I'll just go and drive up by some of these, kind of on these little roads that nobody else will really be around. And I get going, and I start getting that feeling, right? That feeling of like a presence or an entity around. And I'm not really thinking about it too much. I just am like, it's kind of a weird, eerie feeling. And as I'm driving up this road, I can't shake that feeling that somebody's near. And I mean, mind you, I'm driving, but somebody is near, somebody's watching, somebody's around. And as I go around this curve that's pretty fast, I see something laying in the road. And I could swear it was a body. And I, at the time, I thought there was fabric. I thought that, oh my gosh, I have just stumbled upon some hit and run, and that this is some body, and I'm gonna have to jump out and see if this thing is alive, or do mouth to mouth, or go back and get help. Because at the time that this occurred, this is before I had a cell phone, or maybe even before many people had cell phones. So I'd have to, if that was the case, I'd have to drive back and to town and get help for this person. And all of this is going through my mind within, like, you know, fractions of a second. And as I get up closer to the body, I look, and it's not. And now it's changed. It's different, whether that was the shadows or the night or my mind, but it's not. It's a deer. It looks like one of the coal trucks from one of these mines has possibly hit a deer, and or maybe just a regular, somebody's car has hit a deer, but there's a deer carcass lying in the road. And so I just breathe this huge sigh of relief, right? Just, whew, all right, not a murdered person, not a dead body, nobody I'm giving CPR to tonight or having to run back to town to try to get help for, and so relieved. So I speed up now, because I had slowed down to see what this was. I speed up now and finish going around this curve, and right as I go to where the curve is like more blind, and you can't see quite what's coming next if you're going quick, I go to go around this curve, and there standing in the road is a lady who is in this flowing white grayish dress. And she's really opaque, really see-through. I could tell right away it wasn't a real person. It was a spirit, it was a ghost or apparition or whatever you want to call it. And my car just went straight through her. And it was super freaky, because when my car got close to her, she just kind of turned into a mist. But when I was looking at her, you know, you could see, like, it was almost like she had been running and then stopped in front of my car. And then right before my car would have hit her, she just vanished into a mist. But it was kind of freaky, because she looked concerned, she looked worried, she looked like she was trying to get my attention, but she wasn't anything there. So it often makes me wonder if when I had first come across that, you know, when I first noticed something in the road, if it really, because when I first came across it, I thought I saw like wrapped. Like, I thought it looked like material. I thought it looked like a person laying there. And so it just kind of makes me wonder if that was like in preparation to see this spirit. I don't know.
The spirit, you said she was in a dress. Did she look like a pioneer or something, or like a more modern person?
You know, I think the best I could guess would probably be late 1800s, early 1900s. It didn't look like Victorian by any means, and it didn't look super Utah pioneerish, but still way earlier than anything in my memory, or what I would assume would be like even down to the 1940s or 30s. You know what I mean? at the earliest, maybe late 1800s is what it kind of looked like to me, but that could still fit in with some pioneery stuff, but she was younger. You know what I mean?
I just remembered this, and this is how some of these come back to me too, because so many of it was when I was little, right? And so much of it was me like making mental notes, but not always telling people. Anyway, I do remember one where I was, we were always involved in the pageant. For those of you guys that don't know what that is there was like a kind of a pageant play where it would talk about our pioneer ancestors that had come over to Emory County to settle that part of Utah. And it's just like their story. And we would always be involved in it as children. Sometimes we get to play like pioneer children or other parts in it.
It might help here to understand a little more about Mormon pageants and the site of this specific pageant. There was this trend in the 70s and 80s of LDS congregations getting together to create these little reenactment pageants of moments from church history. Moments like stories of pioneers settling the region, early church leaders working on the Book of Mormon, and scenes from the Bible, stuff like that. The cool way to stage your pageant was to perform it in the great outdoors at a striking location. So, for example, the Mormon Miracle Pageant is performed on the hillside right next to the Manti LDS Temple. The Castle Valley Pageant, the one Jane is talking about, was performed in a natural amphitheater at the top of a steep hill a few miles outside Castledale. To even get to the pageant site, you had to climb a set of steep switchbacks. Once you reach the top of the hill, you find yourself in the hollow of a big bowl. On one slope of the bowl is the stage, which consists of these life-size replicas of pioneer cabins, Native American teepees, a blacksmith shop, stables, the works. There's enough room in between all those little buildings to drive actual buggies and wagons. On the other slope of the bowl is a set of bleachers that seats, I don't know, probably over 1,000 people. All around the rim of the bowl are steep drop-offs of at least 40 to 50 feet. The stage side of the amphitheater does have a gentler incline behind it that serves as the backstage area, but even back there, the paths are pretty treacherous for the actors to walk, and the wind is always blowing.
And I remember one time it was super windy. It was so windy. And my dad was holding hands with me and my sister, my older sister, and we were walking, and the wind was like blowing me, and I remember holding on to my dad's arm and like the wind picking me up. And I remember being like, oh my gosh, that was really weird, that was really scary. And so that whole night had kind of like a weird feeling, right? I don't remember if it was that same night, but it was that same year of doing the pageant, okay? And I remember at one point at like a rehearsal, being in the stands and watching, and this is what's so weird to me, because this is all just coming together right now, watching a lady in a white dress, and I thought that this was like a person in the play, right? Like a pioneer, like actor, run towards that cliff that goes off the side, you know? Run towards that cliff and jump, and I like went to gasp, and then nothing fell. But I remember, I think why it's coming back to me the way it's coming back is because when we were walking with Dad, we were going around those little buildings, and as I'm being lifted up in the air, I'm like felt at least like I was dangling off that cliff. Like that's where me and Dad were walking past, was past that cliff. But I'm on his arm, like holding on and getting like almost blown off this cliff. And you can ask him about that. That was insane. But I think that the reason why that's so triggering of a memory connected is because I remember thinking, oh my gosh, that's the first time even as a kid, like would have run around up there. But it was the first time as a kid, I remember thinking like, oh my gosh, people better be careful of that cliff, right? And then I say cliff because in my mind it was, but I mean, it is pretty steep. But I remember that was the first time being like, oh my gosh, people got to be careful of that cliff. And then later on, whether it was that same, I know it was that same year, but I feel like it wasn't that same night, right? Because later on, I'm up in the bleachers just looking down, and that's when I see somebody take off running in a white dress and jump. And I was like, And then nothing fell. It was just disappeared. And I was like, oh, you damn ghosts. Like, you're gonna give me a heart attack. But
you ghosts will be the death of me.
Yeah. Right? Anyway, that's just one that came back just barely. But what is weird is the Cole Hall Road is right by the pageant. So that would have happened when I would have been like 6 or 7. Maybe even younger. Maybe I was 5. And then, yeah, when I was 17, I saw that lady. And I can't say if it's the same one. When I was a child, I used to see spirits and ghosts all the time. Right? And later, as I got older, I lost that ability to see them. So I can hear them still. I can know when they're there. I can still have some amount of like telepathic communication with them when I know that they're present and hear them, discern stuff like even their gender or their names at times if I'm supposed to. But that was probably one of the only ones being older that I actually saw her. So that was an anomaly for me, because it happened when I was probably around 17. And at that point, I hadn't actually been able to see for the like probably 6 years.
Now, I know what you're thinking. What else did Jaina see when she was little? I'm glad you asked. Let's go to another famously haunted Emery County edifice, the high school auditorium.
In the high school, so for your listeners, I guess, that don't understand this high school, there's a huge auditorium. When I say huge, it's an auditorium that's made for theater, and it's bigger than even some places on colleges for theaters. It's really big. And so even Dory, you would probably know, like, how many people does it seat?
1,400.
Yeah, so it is massive. And the stage is like a full stage, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I know there's some bigger, but I think when you're looking at like a professionally sized stage, I think that it is the size.
It's bigger than any of the other ones I've worked on, for sure.
Yeah. So we would run around there all the time as kids, because our dad was taught theater and did all the plays. And so he was often up there doing tons of work. And so when we would go up there, we would run all around that place. And the beautiful part is the lobby. The lobby you walk into, and you get to see, if you look up on each side, you get to see 3 staircases. And the middle staircase is linked together. And so you can, if you get high enough, you can walk through that one and come down all these staircases, and it's really pretty. But we wanted to just run around, because there's also banisters, and we would love just running through the halls, sliding down a banister, finishing the stairs, running up the other side, running all around. So we got our dad to unlock some of the doors so that we'd be able to make that loop where we could run around the first and second level and slide down all these cool banisters. And so while he's doing work, we're running and running. And I remember doing this mostly with my sister, that's right younger than me. But I can't remember who else was really there. I don't remember if my brother was there or not. I feel like he was, but I can't remember for sure. And in the lobby at this time, they had just drug out some couches to put in the lobby for the time being. And we were running around and having fun, and finally we'd gotten kind of tired. And I laid down on one of the couches. And as I was just laying there, like catching my breath and kind of waiting to, start playing again, I see like appear straight before my eyes, not even walk in from any direction, just straight materialize right in front of me. This man, and he looked, he was older, and it's even hard to explain it with like a child, being a child at the time and having still a child's memory, but he was a soldier. I could tell that he had a uniform on, and he was older, and he had kind of a beard, and he wasn't scary though, really scary looking. He didn't seem mean or angry or aggressive at all. But he had one of his arms
pinned back. And I knew that that meant he was missing one arm, right? So it looked like his sleeve had been pinned up behind it. He was standing off the ground. So like as far as his like form, here's what's interesting is I knew he had feet, but I didn't see his feet. So he was about a few feet off the ground and it was just blurry until his legs. But I knew he had feet and his feet were okay. It was just his arm was the wound I saw. And maybe not the full arm gone, but I could only see one hand. And he didn't walk. He did come towards me. He started a little farther off and then came towards me, but he didn't walk. It didn't even feel like a cadence. You know what I mean? Just a gentle glide closer to me. And I tried to figure out, I couldn't figure out how far back, what war this must have been, you know, what uniform this was, because as a kid, I had no idea. And I'm still not positive what it could have been, but I remember thinking at first, like, we'd just been running around, and I thought to myself, am I hallucinating? And as I said that internally to myself, I remember he looked straight at me. And there was this quick acknowledgement of like, oh my gosh, we see each other kind of thing. Like, I knew I could see him, but he looked at me like, oh, like you see me here, you know? And I knew that look because like I had mentioned before, when walking down the streets or, you know, going to the bus stop one day, you know, sometimes I would just tune out everything I saw, you know, just kind of like do, because at some points I thought it was normal. And at some points I was like, oh yeah, you just don't talk about it. People think you're insane kind of thing. And so, but I remember I knew that look that he gave me because I had seen that before. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like I had seen it other times, me looking too long at a spirit and them looking at me like, oh, you see me. And then I remember just, I think what I had said to him, and again, not out loud, right? Just in my head. And I just said, like, are you okay? And he just said, like, go ahead and run on back to your dad now. And I was like, okay. And I didn't tell you this part earlier, but I remember going to move and I couldn't move yet. And so I remember sitting there and then me and him just stared at each other for a few minutes because like my body couldn't get up and move. But again, I didn't feel scared. Like that's what was different is, it's not like, oh my gosh, I was in such fear. I was in shock. I just couldn't move yet. So me and him just like sat there and stared back and forth at each other. And till finally I recognized like I could move and I got up and I walked from the lobby to the auditorium to see my dad. And when I got up to go to my dad, then he dematerialized, like he vanished.
Did you tell dad?
I don't remember. I don't remember if I even told dad. I went home and told my older sister, who thought it was hilarious and made like a ton of fun about it. because I remembered seeing something similar in a book, and I had like some Roald Dahl book, and I think it was a book about his like own childhood, and it had like a picture of a man, and I don't know if it was his dad or something, but it was like of a man that had fought in a war, and it had like a similar similar
uniform.
It wasn't the same uniform, but it had the idea of like a arm being pinned back.
Yeah.
And so then I showed her like, this is what he looked like, not meaning who I actually saw, but like the idea of a soldier with an arm pinned back. Cause I didn't know how else to explain like why, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Anyway, so she teases me forever that I saw Roald Dahl's dad, But it was not him. It didn't look like whoever that was in that photo. That was just the best idea of being like, well, what did it look like? And I'd be like, I don't, kind of like this in the book, you know?
When my dad leads a ghost tour, the really tantalizing part of the ghost story is the tragic death of the ghost in question. And on this show, I often speculate about the origins of the hauntings we've talked about. But if I've learned anything, it's that not every ghost will let its story be known. Some, like the dark figure Catherine saw under the streetlight, make themselves seen, but not fully known. Maybe they're content to keep their secrets. Or maybe too much of who they were is just lost to us. After all, the land is old. We can't know all the comings and goings of the Native American tribes who stayed in the valley for a while and disappeared from the area roughly 1,000 years ago. Who knows what tragedy the Spaniards brought with them when they trekked through the San Rafael Desert on their way to California. And as much as we've tried to preserve the stories of the pioneers and the outlaws of the Old West, we can never really know what secrets they kept in the crevices of the rocks and mountains of the San Rafael Desert. Thank you for listening. The Ghost Box is written, produced, performed, and all of the things by me, Dory Peacock, with help from our four-legged production assistant, George Moosington Adams. I want to thank our storytellers for this episode, Catherine, Jaina, and Neil, two of whom are related to me. Thank you so much for letting me exploit my family. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at TheGhostBoxPod. And if you have a ghost story you'd like to share with us, slide into our DMs on one of those platforms or email it to us at theghostboxpod@gmail.com. The Ghost Box also has a Patreon, so if you would like to make a donation and toss a coin in the box, as they say, go to patreon.com/theghostbox or check the link in the show notes or in our bio on Instagram and Twitter. If you like the show, rate and review on iTunes. It helps people find the podcast. If you didn't like the show, don't blame me for what happens next. Blame the ghost. Just kidding, there's not a ghost. I'm not going to do anything. Thank you again for listening, and stay spooky, everybody. Ninjas in the night, exchanging glances. I'm just gonna do it again. Oh, this is so painful. Wandering in the night, what are the chances?
Moose, be quiet!
Of a ninja fight. This has been the worst recording day in recorded history. But at least they turned off that stupid fountain. Those ninjas in the night. Ninjas in the Night by Dory Peacock.